Welcome to the Enduring Churches podcast with Alan and Trent. We're here to help you as a pastor, as a leader, as a church member to endure.
We want to welcome you back to the Enduring Churches podcast. I'm Alan, and I'm here, as always, with Trent, and we are so glad to be with you today. And we have something extremely special for you today. So, Trent, fill us in on what's going on today.
Well, Alan, I'm excited because we have the opportunity to visit with Wes Falk. Wes and I became friends several years ago when he pastored in the same area that I'm at. And recently he was able to publish an article and was picked up by Christianity Today. And it was entitled Pastoring with a Big Fake Smile. And it was a great article. And so today we want to visit with Wes, get a little bit of his story, because we understand that a lot of us are dealing with the same types of things in our churches. And Wes has some good insight, I think, that he'll be able to share with us today.
It's good to be here.
Well, Wes, we're thankful for you, man. And so I want to ask, first of all, tell us a little bit about your family.
Well, my family, I have my beautiful wife. Her name is Jennifer Falk. She actually writes Christian romance novels, and I love that she does that. I've got two girls. One's an eighth grader, one's a seventh grader, Anna and Emma. And they're the joy of our world. We absolutely love them.
So, Wes, I've gotten to meet your wife, and she is a great lady, and I'm thankful for you all and to be able to know you as friends. And so as we kind of get us updated on where you've pastored and the roles that you've had in the past.
You know, straight out of seminary, I jumped into a church over in Okinawa in Japan. I was a sort of an international pastor for a few years. After that, we moved stateside just to get a little bit closer to family, where we moved to Duncan, Oklahoma. And I pastored a small church there, probably about 85 folks, regular attendance. That's where much of the story that I published in Christianity Today happened. It's sort of built, and, you know, we've walked through our share of hurts and other things in other churches, but that was specifically the most difficult place we served. Moving on from there, we moved out to Pasadena, Texas, where I served as a pastor there of another church. And 5 years after that was over with, we moved on to where I am currently. I'm pastor of the First Baptist Church of Vidalia, Louisiana.
Well, you don't even sound Cajun. So anyway, I know that's something.
Oh, no.
Something you got to work on.
Born, Texas bred. Yes.
Well, you know, we've got a link, and we've already actually posted the link to your article. We'll refresh that and keep that in front of everyone. But you're very vulnerable, and you tell some very personal stories of some hurtful and stressful times that have gone on in ministry. Could you explain a little bit about the story that you're referring to in your article?
Absolutely. When we moved to Oklahoma, I followed a great pastor, Mike Robertson, and he spoke glowingly of the church as we moved there. And I'm thankful for the leadership he gave to that church. As we got there, normally you get about a year, year and a half of a honeymoon within the church where, I mean, just things go right. But we hadn't been there more than 2 or 3 months. And the honeymoon was gone. We came to realize that this church had been a church that had been fighting amongst itself for most of its history. Two of the previous three pastors that had served there had had attempts to fire them. And after we had moved on, the pastor that followed me was fired from the church as well. It's a church that it was a constant power struggle between two sides. Our wake-up moment in that church, we had our I guess it was a one-year-old and a two-year-old in the church, and they were the children's department. And I remember one woman come up and look at me, and she said, "The reason our church is dying is because of your kids." Mm. And wow. You come after me, That's one thing. I'll let stuff, people always gripe about pastors. That's part of the job. But when you come after your kids, man, that just stings. And, it would be petty stuff like that all the time. And one of the challenges I've learned as being a pastor is that you're asked to come and to live and to buy and to reside in a community where you don't know anybody. And so there's this fear that keeps you kind of locked into that community where you say, I want to stay with this church because it's Jesus' body. Another incident that happened while we were at that church was we had two young boys, and we had a bus ministry. Daniel Litchford was our youth minister at that time, and he'd go and he'd pick up these boys. And I mean, he invested his life into ministering to these two young men, to their younger sisters. And they walked in with hats on. And, we'd done in the past because, in the South, you take your hat off when you walk into a building. That's just sort of good manners. And you especially take your hat off if you walk into a church. But these young men didn't take their hats off. So I had an old deacon who came up and looked and he said, you need to tell those young men to take their hats off. And I shared. I said, we've worked with them. But this is who we exist to reach. This is our mission field. These are the people that live in our community. And he looked and he said, either you go tell them to take their hats off or I will. And he ran those boys off out of church. Mm. They're not there anymore. We lost the opportunity to invest in people who do not know Jesus because of a moment like that. And probably the other moment, and it's just, it still kind of just sits on me, was we weren't paid well at this church. Like most pastors of small churches, the church really could not afford a full-time pastor and afford to do ministry at the same time. So we had a old used car that we were sharing, but when my daughter reached school age, we had to get her to school. And we realized we needed two vehicles, so we did what we could. We went to Walmart and bought a $50 bicycle. And I put the bike in the church so it wouldn't get stolen. And deacons and other members of the church would drive by to see if I was in church. And instead of stopping in and just checking, they automatically assumed because the pastor's car was not in the spot, I was not at work that day. And it all came to a business meeting where... And you read about this in books.
Yeah.
I would have never right. thought it would have happened to me. But we had twice the number of people show up to this business meeting than we had coming to church on a regular basis. And they were all members of the church.
Right.
Like, where have these people been? Yeah.
And yes. And I mean, I was moderating the business meeting. And all of a sudden, they started throwing one thing after another after another in. At that moment, the emotions overwhelmed me and I started weeping and, kind of like sharks when they smell blood in the water, right. That didn't break those people's hearts. It just made them angrier and more aggressive. And their goal was they couldn't vote me out as pastor. It took 2/3 vote by the church to vote me out, but they could defeat the budget and force the finance committee to remove my salary from the budget. And so they knew if they could get 51%, they would win the day. And they came 2 votes short. And I'm thankful. my mortgage payment is thankful that that didn't happen. But
yeah, right.
After all that is said and done, probably the last 10 years of ministry really have been tainted by the fears and by undealt with pain from that. I would say, and this is being honest, I didn't write this in the article, probably 4 of 7 nights since then, I've started in my own bed, but many times I'll wake up in the middle of the night with anxiety still from this, and I'll go sleep on the couch in my living room because I struggle to sleep with undealt with pain from that moment. I still can't come up to a church business meeting and not have the fears that came from that one single business meeting come right back at me and me think, what can go wrong? When I meet people in church, whether it's, starting at a church or having a new person join the church, for me to look and immediately think, who are they going to be? How can they hurt me? And I realized if I don't deal with my pain, it doesn't just hurt me. It doesn't just hurt my family. It hurts my church as well.
Wes, you had mentioned that some of that was attacks against your family. And Alan had mentioned earlier, too, that there's so many other pastors that are dealing with hurts like this. And it just breaks my heart that so many families are affected. And so I wanted to ask you, Wes, how did those times affect your wife? Maybe your children were too young to recognize, but how did that affect your family as a whole?
It was difficult for Jennifer. In the same way that when I saw people attack my kids, or I see people attack my wife, it's one thing for you to attack me. It's a whole nother to attack somebody I love. And my wife was ready to go to blows several times. And I had to hold her back and say, honey, we have to show the love of Jesus, because even though these are people who are attacking us, we need to learn not only to turn the other cheek, but also to endure hardship. And we rooted ourselves as a family of saying we serve Jesus even in the midst of people who are hurting us, because our joy in the midst of that time wasn't in how we were treated, but in the fact that God was good and God had called us to serve there in that community. Mm-hmm. So long story short, it brought Jennifer and I closer together. And we have done our best through the years in ministry of trying to keep the conflict that naturally comes with ministry away from our kids, because I don't want my kids to be poisoned by the worst there is in the church.
Well, I think that's certainly wise. I know, one of the things that happens sadly with so many pastors is when they get into these conflicting moments and these stressful moments that we see their marriages disintegrate. And I think it's important to allow those times to draw us closer together. I know that in some of the hardest times Rochelle and I have faced, it's really been those times that we have been drawn closer together. And I know Trent could say that,
yes,
could say that very same thing. And it is important. And, we interviewed Trent's daughter, Jackie, and talked about, how you try to protect your kids from it, but they see it and they know so much more than what we give them credit for. And it's really hard. And you talk about having this kind of fake smile, and we've all done that. Everyone who's been in ministry has walked into a service one day or walked into your church, and people start coming in and you start smiling at people, and the last place you want to be is right there. So tell us how you began to find joy again after just really kind of being at the lowest place you could be in ministry.
Right after that conflict, I turned to food to try to deal with my issues. I am a stress eater, and I don't hide that whatsoever. And I went to the doctor a few months afterwards, and the doctor looked at me and he said, at the age of, and I think it was like 24, something around there, you're about to go on high blood pressure medicine. He said, you have to do something about it. And so I went from one addiction to the next. So I tried to solve my issues with eating, and I went to solving my issues through working out. I went through any number of marathons, endurance races, Ironmans, and at the end of it, working out did not make those things go away. So I moved to Vidalia, Louisiana. And here we have a program that was established and well running when I got here called Celebrate Recovery. Jennifer and I got involved in starting to lead the ministry. Specifically, we led with teenagers, and they asked me to do announcements. And part of the culture of Celebrate Recovery is that you have to get up when you speak at all, and you got to lay your laundry right in front of everybody. You've got to tell people what your hurts, your habits, your hangups are. And so it made me confront those hurts. Now, at first I, said, well, I got food issues, or, I try to channel all my stress to working out. And it led me to dig deep and to really confront the hurts that I had felt over a lifetime of ministry. And I think God was beginning a process of healing us in that time. And I would not say by any means I'm healed today. I still put on that fake smile. I still hurt. But God put on my heart that we needed to go back to Duncan. And we needed to go see the people that we had not seen in 12, 13 years. And at the same time, God put that on their pastor's heart. And as God put it on their pastor's heart, they invited me to come up and speak at their revival. And I was scared to death. I was driving in right past Trent's church in Comanche, and I could feel my heart pound out of my chest. And I had those moments where I looked and I said, I don't want to go. I don't want to do this, because it meant not that those people were angry or mad, that the good people of the church who stood up for us, who fought for us, they were the ones who invited us back. But it meant that I had to deal with my issues. And we showed up and the church loved us. And God brought grace to our family from a lifetime of hurts that we'd chosen to sweep under the carpet. And I would say probably, and this is a long answer to a short question, the moment of the week for us is when one of the people who was particularly nasty to us, somebody who I've had those sadistic dreams in the back of my head of, if I ever got the moment to confront this person again, oh, the things that I would tell them.
Yeah.
And I walked in the door. And of course, you know, but the pastor and several people were hoping that this would be a moment of redemption, a moment this person would confront their sins and confess them to us and seek reconciliation, but they didn't. They came and gave me a snarky remark that they didn't change. But forgiveness at that moment wasn't them getting things right with us. It was me getting things right with God. And the gift of God of healing that spot and allowing me to move past it without having my sadistic dreams come true at that moment.
Well, and Wes, as you're describing that, I'm realizing, you know, we're not really responsible for someone else's response.
Not at all.
Responsible for their time of wrestling with God. But I'm thankful that really began the healing process for you and your wife to kind of let those things go. And I recognize it. There's still hurts that you're wrestling with. And I'm thankful for the Celebrate Recovery group. But so, you know, our podcast here, Wes, is really an effort to help pastors endure. And you know as well as I do that there's a lot of pastors and their families that are dealing with similar struggles. If you could have a chance to tell them or encourage them with something, what advice would you give to them?
Draw near to God. Because we still deal with people who, whether they're wolves in sheep's clothing or they're simply sheep who bite hard, we still deal with people who deeply hurt us on a regular basis. My wife was in tears a couple weeks ago at church, just because, I mean, somebody that they know your vulnerability, and it's like they seek out that vulnerability and try to put a knife in and turn at it. And what we have to remember, my wife and I all the time, is we don't serve men, we serve God. And that the pleasure of our life is not found in the way other people feel about us. I'm a people pleaser. Man, I want to make people happy all the time. I struggle to make difficult decisions because at the end of it, I have to make a choice between one group of people and the next. But at the end of it, I have to constantly come back and say, I exist to please God. And when I find that center point, that's that moment that the fullness of God really just kind of dwells. And you look and say, Yes, it is God who sustains me through every difficult season.
Well, that's just beautiful, and I appreciate you saying that because, you know, I remember being at a conference and being reminded that at the end of the day, I have to please an audience of one. You know, I can look out at a congregation, and my job is not to please them. My job is to please my Father in heaven, and that is something that is important for us to always kind of keep as a foundational thought in whatever ministry that we're called to, and whether you're in the pulpit or you're in the pew, so to speak, it's important to remember that. Well, you know, as you have a chance to look back on some of your experiences, and you're able to maybe, in a way, you talk about, oh, all the things I'd like to say. You've also probably had a chance to think about how your experience has taught you and how you might handle some of those experiences differently. So, what do you wish you might have done differently in some of those circumstances?
Oh, goodness. I would be less apt to please people. I remember in the midst of the conflict, trying to be such a peacemaker that I would drive out. And I mean, to the neglect of my family, I would start the morning at 5, 6 a.m. and I wouldn't be home till 9 or 10 o'clock at night because I would be at disgruntled members' homes trying to find peace, trying to mend fences, trying to find ways to please them. And my life became sort of this reaction of constantly chasing after people and constantly trying to make them happy. And if I could do it all over again, I still would have sought peace. I still would have gone and done everything I could to try to prevent disunity in the body of Christ. But at the end of it, I would have said, if this is what it takes to move God's church forward and get God's church back on mission and plant my feet and say those boys with those hats could stay in the church, I would have stuck by my guns a little bit more.
Yeah, that as I was reading that story about especially those boys, and to me that really breaks my heart because you recognize and you think that there's a pretty good chance that those boys will never be in church again. And
yes.
And that really, I mean, talk about losing an opportunity to change an entire family tree and even maybe, you know, what we don't know what in the future. And so that is,
yes,
it's a horrible thing. And, you know, I know that we all wrestle, Wes and Alan, we wrestle with how long and how far do we chase those sheep. And I know that we're supposed to shepherd them, and but there is that element of personal responsibility and personal growth. You know, if they're not willing to follow the Lord, then I can't make them follow the Lord. I can't make them be obedient to Christ. So, and that I wrestle with that as well.
One thing I learned in the process, and I've learned this over the course of my ministry experience, is many times when there is a griper and you chase after the griper, you end up elevating the gripe. You end up giving that person the platform that they were looking for to begin with. And I've turned a small group of people off into a large army in my ears and in my head, because I have allowed the gripes of others to color the way I view the church. And perhaps where I've grown in ministry is I've learned to take a small minority of griping for what it is, minimal,
right,
and not empower it and give it the platform it needs.
Well, and I appreciate you saying that. That was one of the things when you were talking about, you know, one of the things to get, that if you could go back, I've seen that. Sometimes we talk, we take a small issue and we talk it into a big issue, because we're sometimes thinking, oh, well, that's just, you know, we can win someone over. And sometimes there are just people who don't want to be won over. There are people who are so poisoned in their spirits and so cynical whether that's in their faith, lack of faith, whatever it is, that they are so cynical that we're not going to win them over. And all we do is give them reason to believe that they're not alone. And one of the best things we can do is kind of isolate the argument sometimes. And I see that. That's one of the things I see when I see pastors who are going through times like this. Oftentimes, one of the constant things that I see is, I've been in these people's homes. We've talked about this, and we've talked about this. And sometimes I say, yeah, because we've talked it up. And I think that's a really important thing that you've brought to everyone's attention today.
Thank you.
Well, Wes, I want to say thank you for taking time. I know that you're busy as well. And I also want to, I'm very thankful that you're still in ministry. I know that many have gone through horrible things and have decided to leave ministry. And we want to encourage pastors. We're all dealing with the same stuff. And Satan wants you to think that you're the only one that has gone through the stuff that you're going through. But part of the reason we wanted Wes to share today is to help you to understand that others have gone through horrible things in church life as well. And so we're going to refresh Wes's article on our Facebook page and put a link also on our enduringchurches.com site. But Alan and I, our heart is to encourage you. And so if we can come alongside you as a pastor or leader, please contact us. We would love to get to visit with you by phone or even come and do a consultation with you. But also help us to share this podcast with others, because our goal is to lift up pastors and say, keep going, guys, keep going, endure. We appreciate your time today, and thank you so much for listening, and we pray that God blesses you big. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the Enduring Churches podcast. We truly appreciate your time. Help us spread the word to your friends and family about this podcast. If you would like to be a sponsor of this program, please contact us via our Facebook page or enduringchurches.com.